You are listening to the number one finance show at this address, Fees Always Win, where it's not just the name, it's the cost of doing business.
What's a rip?
A rip, commission. That's why we work here.
We make huge rips.
No, I still don't know how it works.
But you and me, the brokers, right, we're taking home cold hard cash via commission.
Right.
No matter whether our clients make money or lose money, Duke and Duke get the commissions.
The only thing we don't know is your fee.
My fee is the free market. And your partner.
U.S. Department of Transportation, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration advised that there were 7.2 million collisions in 2016. This doesn't include single vehicle losses. Someone hits basketball goal in driveway or loses control on a wet road and ends up in a ditch. Those losses add an unknown amount to the total, as they are often handled out of pocket or not reported to law enforcement or insurance companies. While many states mandate a minimum amount of liability coverage that must be maintained to operate a vehicle on public roads, states have different requirements. For example, Texas requires 30, 60, 25, and Louisiana requires 15, 30, 25. While the first number reflects maximum payout to the injured party, the second number reflects the maximum payout for all injured parties involved in the loss. The third and final number reflect the maximum payout for damaged property caused by the insured. If you have recently purchased a new car in the last 5 years, you quickly realize those stated minimums are not even enough to fix your car. And you would be right. It's not. And it is for that reason that we're taking a week break from the financial market and reviewing one of the most common available protection for your assets, auto insurance. As two friends who met in claims training, this is a subject that is near and dear to both of our hearts, as Elo has experienced adjusting losses involving collisions, catastrophic events, all through the South. My experience primarily lies with property damage adjusting and a liaison between the insurance carrier and independent agents. In this conversation, we will review available coverages, statistics, anecdotal examples that we have experienced through our positions. You are listening to the Fees Always Win Investment Club show, hosted by Chris and Elo, two investors that are learning and two investors that are learning more every day and taking you along with the journey. You could find us on Facebook, iTunes, and probably every other place where you get your podcasts. Call and leave a message on our voicemail line, 281-645-9205. And please leave a rating on our iTunes page. And if it's 5 stars, we'll read it on the air. The heartbreak I have heard over the phone from an underinsured driver using terminology full coverage and not having the coverage after requesting policy protection lets me know we should throw away that word full term or full coverage right now. How you doing, Ella?
I'm doing fine. I just shook my head when you brought up the term full coverage, because we hear that all the time, but people truly have no idea what that means. They think they know, and when you start to break it down, sometimes they have no clue. So I'm just shaking my head at it. I am doing well. I'm enjoying this topic. I'm enjoying the conversation, and I'm ready to try and help people get a better understanding of what they're signing their name on a dotted line for exactly.
And so when you've heard that conversation of full coverage, where do you think it comes from or originates? Because I don't watch any commercials on TV that indicate full coverage. When I've searched the websites of multiple carriers, I really don't see the term full coverage. Is that a banking term?
That's what I'm not sure about. I don't know where it came from, but I guess it started out as a term that gave people a peace of mind, or gave them a sense of peace in regards to what they're signing up for, feeling like, okay, after I sign for this, I'm fully covered. I have nothing else to worry about. As far as where the term originated and why people say it and feel it in the way that they do, that's a good question. But I do know that people need to understand just because it's a term, it doesn't mean that it really covers everything that you think it does. You really need to get a clear understanding of what you're signing up for. Because depending on the company, whether it's a standard company or a non-standard company, the coverages and things available to you can be completely different. You really need to be aware of what you're signing up for and not just assume based off of people telling you the full coverage or you're fully covered that you truly are. You really need to know what it is you're signing up for and what options are available to you versus what options are not.
And before we continue, I think there's a couple of definitions, or at least one definition, that we should agree upon for the audience of what is a deductible. And the Google Dictionary defines a deductible as a specified amount of money that the insured must pay before the insurance company will pay a claim. Most often you hear of $500 deductibles or $1,000 deductibles. Something happens to your car, you have to pay $500 out of pocket, and then the insurance company pays the difference up to that maximum amount on your policy. And another thing I think we should cover is trends. That one thing that's consistent is there are more accidents on average. They increase every year. The cost of fixing a car has increased every year. There's more technology in a vehicle that should decrease accidents, and they're starting to see the difference between the two type of cars. And vehicles are much more expensive. And as an example, I want you to picture in your head the cost of buying a Tahoe 5 years ago, which probably averaged about $45,000, and a brand new Tahoe that now costs about $70,000. Escalades are almost a $90,000 vehicle now. And I remember as a childhood, that was a $50,000 vehicle, and that was a lot of money. But now it's almost the cost of a house.
Yeah, we talked about that before regarding the trends, but the thing that scares me about that, like we talked about before, or we're going to discuss regarding the limits that you went over, let's say property damage limits in the state of Texas is $25,000. If a car is $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 and it's total in an accident and you only have $25,000 on limits, there's going to be a problem. So that's a good reason for us to talk about these things, because people really don't know. Like when I see a Lamborghini beside me, I slow up and let them go where they're going. I don't want any problems. I don't want them getting close to me. I want you to go where you're going and have a good day.
Yeah, because that money has to come from somewhere to compensate the person. And if your limits aren't high enough, often you're taken to court for more money. And if you have something like a house or any other assets, a judgment could be made against you, so you have to pay out of pocket when – coverage, the difference in coverage might only be $100 a year to have higher limits.
Right. And then hopefully your insurance can agree to pro rata where they agree to a certain percentage of what's owed, but even still, you still owe what's left over. So like you said before, paying that little bit of money, that extra money, can save you a lot of pain, heartache, and confusion moving forward.
And so that number that you referenced, the $25,000, that's what we call the liability limits. And each state has a different amount. What's the amount for Mississippi?
Mississippi is $25,000 as well. It's only certain states I think Louisiana or Florida. I think Florida, it can be as low as $10,000, $10,000 to $15,000. Each state has the same way each state has different vernacular, different sayings, or different phrases. That's how policies are. Policies are completely different. For example, Alabama. Alabama's policies are completely different. Alabama, if you get in an accident, if you are deemed to be 1% at fault, you can't get anything. Alabama, different states have different policies. So each policy is written specific toward their territory. Texas, Mississippi, for the most part, their limits are the same, but other states are different. And these are things you want to know as well. But like we said before, $25,000, it sounds like a lot, but when you look at the value of vehicles or the fact that you have some accidents that involve multiple cars, if you get into an accident with two cars and the first car is damaged and it's total at $23,000, more than likely you're going to have a limits issue. So that's why you want to make sure if you're paying $5 extra a month or however much it is to get $50,000, whatever you decide to get, is well worth it to save you the headache of trying to figure out where the extra money is going to come from.
And so what is the definition of liability?
Well, liability, according to Wikipedia, liability insurance is a part of the general insurance system of risk financing to protect the purchaser or the insured, or if we're talking to you directly, the named insured, from the risk of liability imposed by lawsuits and similar claims. It protects the insured in the event he or she is sued for claims that come within the coverage of the insurance policy. So liability, more times than not, you don't necessarily have to have collision or comprehensive coverages on your vehicle. A lot of people have what's called liability only. Liability basically protects you if you damage someone else's vehicle or someone else's property. Like we said before, it has a limit on it. The limits can be changed depending on what you agree upon before you get your policy. But it's important to have liability because you need that no matter what. If you damage someone else's vehicle, like I said before, if you damage someone else's bike, whatever it is, if you cause that damage, that's liability. You're liable for that. For example, if you rent a car from Enterprise, they have coverage just to cover the rental, and they also have the liability to cover you, where if you damage someone else's vehicle, you're covered through Enterprise with their additional coverages. So it just protects you just in case you damage someone else's vehicle or someone else's property.
And as you indicated, liability is often the requirement in every state, which is why you drive by stores that say $25 gets you liability insurance, so you could be on the road and you won't get a ticket for it. You did mention one thing in the name insured, and that's important because that's who's listed on the actual policy. The way that some of these contracts read, as Ello indicated, differences between states, but differences between policies, if that someone is operating your car and they aren't listed on the policy, depending on the carrier you're with, if they damage property, including yours or somebody else, they might not be covered and have protection. And the owner of the property that's damaged could come back after you, since the vehicle is registered to you and you're ultimately responsible for your vehicle causing damage.
Right. I think it's important for people to understand as well. On the named insured policy, the people that you list on the policy, those are the people that are going to be covered as far as operating the vehicle. Now, this isn't a topic we necessarily went over, but you have the option to add an excluded driver. Excluded driver is somebody who lives in a household, but you're saying they don't drive the vehicle. The only thing about adding the excluded driver to the policy is basically what you're saying is this person does not operate the vehicle. And if they at any point in time operate the vehicle, there's no coverage. So if an excluded driver is driving the vehicle, tap somebody else's bumper, there's no coverage for your vehicle or the other vehicle. But like I said before, regarding the policy, each state is different. For example, in Mississippi, at one point in time, depending on the policy for one company I was with at the time, the coverage basically said that there wouldn't be coverage for your vehicle, but they would cover the other vehicle. So the term and the policies written by the states change. It varies. It varies by the insurance company. It varies by the policy. It varies by the state. So you really need to get an idea of what you're signing up for, because the coverages you may have had with one company may be vastly different with a different company that you're going with. But a lot of people don't read the policy because they assume it's all the same when it's really not.
And even though it might cost extra money to add somebody to your policy, like your child or your live-in significant other, make sure you do it so you protect yourself and protect your own assets, because you don't want to be found responsible for something that you could have had coverage for.
And so
the other aspect of that, we're talking the liability coverage, and that's usually for property damage. And I don't think we really went into that definition of what property damage coverage is, which is often the requirement by the state of what they're really looking for you to have minimum limits to cover.
Right. So if you go to DMV.org, property damage liability insurance coverage, basically liability insurance. It covers the cost of damages to someone else's property after an accident you caused. Most commonly, your property damage will pay out when you're at fault for an accident that causes damage to someone else's car. Property damage, it's not just someone else's car per se, but more than not, that's what it is. Let's say you get into an accident where you hit someone else's house, you hit a fence, you damage different type of property. Basically, property that you damage, you're responsible for, you're covered. But like we said before, and the reason we keep going over this is because with the property damage coverage in Texas, I can only go off of Texas, but it varies from state to state. There's a limit as far as what's covered. The minimum limits in Texas is $25,000. The reason that's important is because if you damage property, you want to make sure that you have enough coverage for the property that's damaged. That can really change based on the state, but it's also something you want to discuss with your agent. Because you can go from 25 to 50, and a lot of people don't know that. They just go with what they have because they assume that's their only choice. But property damage basically means that if you damage someone else's property, as far as their vehicle or their personal property, then your insurance company is responsible for that. One other thing I want to say in regards to this, because this is something that happens a lot, what you may see, another thing that's very important in regards to insurance is that in the insurance agreement, you're basically agreeing that if you get into an accident, you have a duty to cooperate with your insurance. The reason I bring this up is because let's say you were to damage someone else's property or someone else's vehicle. If a claim is reported, the only way your insurance can assist, the only way your insurance can proceed, they have to speak to the named insurer to get their statement to verify what happened. Let's say you don't have a police report, you don't have witnesses, you don't have video of the accident. If you don't cooperate with your insurance as far as giving them a statement about what happened, they can't proceed. A lot of times people assume by filing the claim and giving the information for the claim to be reported, that's all they need, and that's not the case. I just wanted to put that out there because a lot of people make that assumption that's incorrect.
And I want the audience to get a understanding of our – put yourself in the place of the last time that you went to the hospital or had an injury and what that bill was before your insurance took over, or even the last time you went for a cold or a fever. And it's often the bill comes in at $1,000. Now think of the last time you had an injury, like a broken arm or broken anything, that bill is going to be multiple $1,000s. Those first two numbers that we referenced for the Texas minimum of 30, 60, and then 25, the 30-60 is your bodily injury coverage. That's to protect. The definition by WalletHub.com is when you're found legally responsible for a car accident, bodily injury liability coverage is part of your insurance policy that pays for the costs associated with the injuries to the other person or people involved. This coverage also provides a legal defense in the event you are sued for damages. So even if somebody gets out of their car from an accident, you think they're okay at the scene, their back starts hurting the next day or they start tensing up, that becomes a bodily injury claim if they call the insurance company back and say they're injured. That would be when your coverage comes in, and the insurance company will let you know. It's often mandated by the state that they let you know that somebody has filed a claim in regards to bodily injury, but they typically handle it from there. They don't want you negotiating with the claimant who's the person who was injured. They don't want you reaching out to them. They'll do that because there's a process and an expertise that your insurance has that you don't, whether that's negotiating hospital bills or understanding what it costs on average to help somebody get to get their life back to where it was prior to the accident. And a couple of examples that I've seen is you see somebody often get injured in an accident, a T-bone at an intersection. If there's multiple people in that other vehicle, the max they could get is $30,000 if that's your coverage, even if they have broken all their ribs, which I have seen, and the bill comes out to more. So that's why you'd want to up that coverage, because you don't want them coming back after you or their health insurance coming back after you to get their money. You want to make sure that they're protected, even if it was truly an accident, that you didn't intend to do it. There might have been a light malfunction. There could be anything on how that determination is made. So the bodily injury coverage is just as important as that property damage coverage, because oftentimes it could cost more. If the damage of the property reaches the max, the bodily injury is likely going to max out as well, just due to the injuries caused in an accident, especially if children are involved.
Right. And that's very important as well, because medical bills add up. And we're not even talking about going to the chiropractor or different things like that, loss of wages. There's so many things that are factored in that you want to make sure you're covered. You want to make sure you're protecting yourself, especially considering yes, it's going to cost you more in the long run, but based on the peace of mind that you have and the additional coverage, it's worth it. And if nothing else, when you're in the process of getting your insurance, it's worth having a discussion with your agent or the person you're getting the policy through, just to know all your options. If nothing else, it's worth knowing your options. Chris went over bodily injury. I'm going to go over two main constructs regarding insurance, regarding comprehensive and collision coverage.
Well, but these are before you get into that, Chris. Can I make one more point about bodily injury or the minimum limits required by the state?
Yeah.
Oftentimes you see commercials for multiple insurance companies. They sell home and auto and other products together. So oftentimes those the discounts that are called multi-policy discounts for having multiple products with the same carrier, that you have their home insurance, you have their auto, are linked to how high your limits are. And often to change your limits from minimum to the next tier isn't as much as you think. It's not doubling the cost, even though you're going from 30, 60 to 50, 100. Oftentimes it's about less than 10% more for more coverage. And the home insurance side will likely give you a discount that equals what you're paying to go up, or probably is much higher than what you're paying to go up. So you get more protection. You also get more discounts on your property. So that could be a consideration, and we encourage you to reach out to whoever you have your insurance through and have this discussion on how you could better protect yourself. That's what agents are for. We're at a point in our life now where many people don't mow their own lawns. They don't clean their own houses. Because you don't have time to become an expert on how to do that. It should be the same for insurance, because insurance agents are expert at what they do. They do this every single day. So I encourage you to reach out and utilize that expertise. Oftentimes with multiple policies, they don't charge you an extra fee because they're getting a commission back from the insurance company. But they want your business because that's commission they didn't have before. So reach out to someone, whether that's around the corner or you look through the phone book. Wait, nobody uses a phone book. You look on Yelp or a Google search. Reach out to somebody to get clarification of what your best options are. So we can go to comp and collision. Sorry for interrupting on that part.
Oh, no. Let me add one more thing. A lot of people don't want to bother their agents. Your agents work for you. So at the end of the day, whatever information you need, your agent shouldn't mind. They should be able to help you answer your questions. And if they're not, then that's when you want to possibly look into finding other agents. But more times than not, your agents are very helpful. They're willing to explain things to you, because the better they explain things to you, it means the better you'll be in regards to a client, and you also build that trust, because you both will have a better understanding of what's needed and what you're getting yourself into. So, Chris, you make a valid point. Like we said before, we're going to get into comprehensive and collision coverages as well. I'm going to add an additional thing regarding rental also, because it's one thing regarding rental that a lot of people don't know, and I just want to clarify that as well.
Okay.
Regarding comprehensive, so How Stuff Works defines it as comprehensive auto insurance, which covers damage caused by incidents other than a car accident, including theft, fire, vandalism, weather, falling objects, and animal damage. It isn't required by law, but it may be a good idea depending on the value of the car you're driving. So comprehensive, more times than not, is other than collision. So let me give you an example. Comprehensive coverage is if there's a hailstorm, if there's a flood, if your car is caught on fire, things of that nature. That's comprehensive. Anything other than a collision. But there is a stark difference. So, for example, collision. So collision would basically, if we're looking at Wallet Hub, it is whether your vehicle is involved in a crash within another with another vehicle or ran into a fixed structure. You can rely on a collision insurance to offer you coverage. Most car crashes and auto accidents fall under this kind of insurance policy. We're also going to go over some lists regarding additional coverages through collision. But the reason I want to bring them up together is, so let's say you're driving and there's an object in the road and you strike that object. That's collision. If you're driving and the object falls from a truck and hits your vehicle, that's comprehensive. The biggest difference is you striking an object versus an object like a flying object falls into you, or you hit a deer, or it's a hailstorm. Anything other than a collision is what's considered comprehensive. Now, I also want to put this disclaimer out there because I work catastrophe claims for a bit. A hailstorm is considered comprehensive. Now, if you decide to get a hammer and create dents in your hood, that's considered fraud. That's not necessarily considered comprehensive coverage. Just want to put that out there for those people. But the biggest difference between the two is it's all based on how the accident occurred. It can be basically the same outcome, but it depends on how that outcome arrived. If something flew and hit your car, comprehensive. If you struck an object, collision. It's a difference there. If you strike a stop sign or a building, that's a collision. Versus if you strike, if it's not striking, if it involves you striking something other than a living animal or something like that, it's collision. The only time it's striking is if you're hitting an animal. Most times you see that in deer hits, or depending on the territory you're in, it may be coyotes or I don't know. The reason I wanted to add rental in is one, rental coverage. A lot of people assume by having full coverage, they have rental coverage. Rental coverage is something that you have to request to have added onto the policy more times than not. Also, you need to know, based on your policy and the insurance you have, you need to know what type of rental you have. Because some companies offer rental where they set up a direct, they set up a direct deal and they cover the rental for a certain amount. Some people have where it's $20 over 30 days, which would be $20 for $600. That doesn't mean that you have $600 to cover over a 30-day timeline. It means that in the span of a month, your rental will be covered at $20 a day up to $600 in the month, which is the maximum. That doesn't mean it's always going to be that way. What that means is that basically the coverages that are afforded to you are based on the policy max you agree to. The reason I bring this up is because that can be adjusted as well, but also depending on the insurance company you're with, some companies have what's called rental reimbursement. So, yes, you may have rental, but the rental is reimbursement only. So that's something you want to know before you sign up for rental. You don't want to think you have rental. You may have rental, but it's reimbursement only. Because if you find that out when you're in an accident and you don't have those funds available to you, that may put you in a bind versus having the type of rental with a direct bill set up. But you also want to know the limits for the rental because it can be $600, it can be $900, it can be $1,200. But you want to know those limits because when you get into a rental, if you're involved into an accident, most rentals, if you're at $20, you're getting the smallest car. You need to know that before going in. If you're 6'8" and you're trying to get a full-size vehicle and you only have $20 coverage per day, you're going to have to pay out of pocket additional for that because your insurance company is not going to cover that additional fee. Chris, I know I just added that in, but I kind of want to explain that because a lot of people assume because they have rental coverage, they automatically have rental, and that's not always the case.
And you're right on the rental because there's a couple of other points that I was thinking as you were speaking is the price of rentals have gone up. So often that $30 doesn't get you the same type of car it would have 10 years ago, where that probably would have gotten you a mid-size sedan. That's, as you said, that's going to get you the smallest car on the lot that probably doesn't match the vehicle that you're driving. So just because you're driving a large vehicle doesn't mean the insurance company has to provide that. So you should take that in consideration and up the limits. And that point of rental reimbursement versus rental is a good one as well, because sometimes for them to manage their prices at insurance companies, they have partnerships with certain rental companies, so they get better pricing in larger vehicles that are available. So you could ask these questions and they'll let you know what rental that they use the most often. Another one, as it relates to differences between carriers, I wanted to go back to comprehensive, because in Texas, I know there are policies that have differences in what they'll cover. That comprehensive, it could be anything that happens to your car that you did not cause or was intentional. As a result of many storms recently, I know in Texas there have been adjustments to certain comprehensive policies, and you should read it in detail and talk with your agent that there's some new policies that don't cover flood. They don't cover hail, but they cover everything else, such as fire or theft or anything else. So read that policy and make sure you understand what you're purchasing, because just as it says comprehensive doesn't necessarily mean it's everything any longer. As companies adjust their rates to make sure that they could make it affordable for people, if you live in a flood-prone area like Houston, making sure you have a carrier that doesn't have a flood exception is going to be important to protect your assets, because you don't want your car to get flooded and them not pay to help you get it fixed or help you get a new one, because that's not a coverage that was available at the time.
Right. And regarding the Dallas area, hail is very prominent in the Dallas area. So you want to make sure, if you're signing up for a coverage, you want to make sure you cover for that, because more times than not, Dallas, the DFW area, is affected by hail on a yearly rate. There's normally the hail season where it occurs quite often. So you want to make sure that's something that's covered, because if it isn't, it's going to be a problem. Like you said, Chris, it's good that you read the policy and you know what type of coverages are available to you.
And on the next one, this is also an optional coverage, but in Texas, it's required unless you reject the coverage. And normally the rejection is going to require that you sign something. And this is going to be for the next three coverages that we discuss. The first one that you probably are unsure that you signed this, it's called the personal injury protection. And if you sign to reject it, I really recommend that you get it back, because it's really helpful and it costs a minimum amount a month. And it's short for PIP, and it means personal injury protection. And CoverageHound.com defines it as an extension of car insurance that covers medical expenses and, in many cases, lost wages. It's often called no-fault coverage because its inherent comprehensiveness pays out on claims agnostic of who's at fault for an accident. PIP insurance offers several benefits that you won't get from health insurance policy, such as coverage for lost wages, funeral costs, and it typically costs about $10 a month additional to have that protection. As we mentioned bodily injury, one thing that I did not indicate or clarify is that bodily injury is only available for people not listed on the policy or in the household. So if somebody is injured in the accident and, say, God forbid, you're riding in the car with your daughter, an accident occurs to where you might rear end somebody, your daughter's injured, you're injured, and the other vehicle's injured, the bodily injury coverage only pays for the injuries for the other injured party in the vehicle that you hit. If you want your family to have that additional protection, you want to make sure you have that PIP coverage, which is often in $2,500, $5,000, or $10,000 increments to have that. So it's a minimum cost to add that to your policy, and it's more flexible than the next one, which is MedPay. You have the option to have this in Texas, though it doesn't require rejection if you don't have it. MedPay is often cheaper than personal injury protection. However, PIP covers more than MedPay. and MedPay is a not at fault coverage, but only pays medical related expenses as a result of being involved in a loss. It's not going to pay for the lost wages. It's not going to pay any of that. So please make sure you have that conversation with your insurance representative to protect you and your assets in the best manner. Anything to add there, Ello?
No, that covers it all. I mean, a lot of people don't know about PIP. When I first got into insurance, I thought PIP was more so something you saw in Florida, because PIP is used heavy in Florida, but it's basically used everywhere. And it's something you want to have, because if you're in a situation where you are injured, like you said before, there are benefits that come with it. So that is something you want to have on your policy. You'll do better having it and not needing it than needing it and not having it.
Very true. And I think that could be summed up as a general thought about this entire conversation today, especially with all the optional coverages outside of the state minimums, is it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. So that's probably the best way to express this whole conversation and episode. The next topic is going to be underinsured or uninsured motorist coverage, usually called UM/UIM coverage. And this pays for injuries such as medical expenses that result from an accident caused by a driver as too little to cover all the injuries. In some states, UIM is part of the UM coverage, like in Texas. Covered UIM expenses for you and your passengers include medical bills, vehicle damage, everything that comp and collision would if you weren't responsible. It is a not at fault coverage that if you're responsible for the accident, you can't use your UM/UIM coverage, but it is there to protect you. Often it costs around 5% for about $40 per term. So it's not a very big expense, and it's available. When we are considering those auto limit minimums for the state minimums, the expectation why the state sets them so low, because there's an expectation that everybody has it. I will say the Insurance Institute reported in 2017 that 14% of the motorists on Texas roads are uninsured. To put that in tangible number, that amounts to 2.2 million licensed drivers in Texas without insurance. As a state, our uninsured motorist percentage doesn't even crack the top 10, as Florida, Mississippi, and New Mexico are the top three and are estimated to have more than 20% of their motorists uninsured.
Right. And in regards to uninsured motorists, something you want to consider based on your policy, most companies where you have uninsured motorists, you have to have a situation where you file a police report, and you have to have some type of documentation to prove what happened. Or let's say the other party, you find out they don't have insurance, you have to get a letter from the other party's insurance company confirming that they don't have insurance. Because you have the uninsured motorist coverage, you have to show proof that the other party does not have the coverage. And once you're able to do that by the police report, or more times than not, you need the police report, but also by having that letter from the other party's insurance showing that the policy was canceled, expired, or whatever may have happened prior to the accident occurring. Or on the police report, it may show that the policy, the other party did not have insurance. Another thing, another benefit to have uninsured motorist coverage, if let's say you have a $500 or $1,000 deductible, would have uninsured motorist coverage. The typical deductible for uninsured motorists is $250 for the most part. It may vary based on the policy, but on average, in the state of Texas, it's typically $250. Also, the main thing to consider with uninsured motorists is that it covers your vehicle regarding damages and also injuries as well. That's another thing. It has uninsured bodily injury protection as well, which basically is bodily injury, but it's only covered, it's added in if it's uninsured motorist. So, like Chris said before, a lot of people who drive around, they don't have insurance. And being an adjuster, one thing I see a lot of is a lot of hit-and-run accidents. And for those people who do have the uninsured motorist coverage, by them being able to utilize that, by being able to prove with a police report or with the other parties the carrier showing that they didn't have coverage at the time, it makes a big difference. Now, regarding the agent side, I would like to speak with them about this, but from what I was told, if you use an uninsured motorist, it doesn't affect you premium-wise as it would if you were to use collision or comprehensive. But uninsured motorist is a great benefit to have, but like Chris said, it only applies if you're in an accident and you're hit by someone else. If you get into a hailstorm, you can't file uninsured motorist against the skies. It only applies based on someone else causing damage to your vehicle. So if you back into a wall or a concrete barrier and there's paint transfer or something that indicates it was a fixed object, you can't use uninsured motorist coverage. And most adjusters and also most appraisers, they'll be able to tell the difference versus you with your vehicle being damaged by another vehicle or a fixed object. But it is something to consider. It is a great benefit when you realize that a lot of people riding around, they don't have insurance. And a lot of times people that get into accidents, sometimes, not always, but sometimes people do leave the scene. So you do want to have that option available to you just in case to protect yourself.
And as Ello referenced, evidence or keeping that available is going to be one of the biggest things in dealing with any of these accidents. That if you do get injured in a collision caused by someone else or yourself, please keep all receipts, all bills, like build a folder when you have an accident. Whether it's a digital folder or not, scan all your documents in. Make sure that it's available so when the adjuster calls, you could share it or send it to them. Another thing that I have seen help a lot of customers, and even when I was adjusting, one that probably saved a couple of my customers when there was a dispute in the claim, is having a dash camera. The price has come down significantly to the point where you can get them less than $100 now, and it records everything that you see. Because oftentimes in claims, you get the he said, she said, and so the company will deny it on behalf of protecting their own client. And so you have to use your own insurance, whether that's collision. In those cases, you can't use uninsured motorists. But having a camera, I've seen claims that I've adjusted where a truck has hit one of the vehicles. They tell my insured, or they tell the insured that I was representing, that my insured ran the red light and the truck had the right of way. Not until the insured says, oh yeah, I do have additional leverage. I have this dash cam, which shows the light was green when I entered the intersection. And so the truck ran it. And because of that, the other carrier was willing to take responsibility because they realized if it was brought to court or arbitration, they would lose and probably cost them more money. So that purchase by that one customer of $200 at the time for the dash cam saved them at least a $500 deductible. I don't remember what their deductible at the time was, but it saved them a $500 deductible. It saved them at-fault indicator on their policy, which would have increased the overall cost. And it saved them a peace of mind because at no point were they truly flustered because they knew they had the big joker.
Right, one in the possible. It makes a very big difference regarding the dash cam. There's a YouTube video where I guess a guy on a motorcycle was trying to commit fraud, and basically the woman stopped and the guy he fell out and jumped under her front hood like she ran him over, and a witness came out like, I saw everything. And so they look at her car and they see the dash cam. They basically get back on the bike and he gets back in his car and they leave. But Chris, you are so right, because a lot of situations where it's word versus word, where a claim may be denied because it's two people providing two different accounts of what happened. And since you're not there to actually see it, you can't necessarily take a person at their word. It's basically disputed and liability is denied. Because I hate to say this, but more times than not, sometimes people, they misremember things, and sometimes they just lie. It happens. So you want to make sure you have everything. You want to have documents or receipts, in the sense. So it's everything. Because you want to make sure that if there's any discrepancy, that you're able to support everything you're saying. And sometimes I've seen this as well, where a person will get into an accident. They admit fault to you, like, I'm so sorry. I was at fault. I admit everything. let's not call the police. We don't have to call the police. We're fine. Just let the insurances handle it. And then you call their insurance and say, hey, this person damaged my car. And they call it. I'm like, no, I didn't. They hit me. That's why you want to have as much information as you can. And if you do get into an accident, which is kind of taking us to a whole other level, if you can't get a police report, you want to try and get it. Sometimes they won't always come out, and I understand that. But if you can't get it, you want to get it. Because a lot of times people's stories change versus the things they say at the time of the accident versus days later. So that's something to keep in mind.
Oh, that's a valid point. I didn't even reference that because it's an everyday occurrence that an adjuster heard. They told me it was their fault at the scene and to just call their insurance company. And then the person who was at fault denies it once it's called. So if you can, always call an officer, get it documented. They'll make sure it's the license plate. They'll make sure it's the phone number, that they have the insurance, the file. Sure, sometimes those documents aren't always correct, but at least you have reference of when the accident occurred, the day that it occurred, the name of the person that was driving, because that can make a very difference and help process it. And give your adjuster time, because oftentimes those police reports, if that's needed to make a determination, could take up to 10 days because officers could, they don't have to submit their police reports every day. Often they submit them in batches, usually at the end of their weekly shift, but I've seen them not submit them for 9 days if they're on for 9 days straight.
And something else I want to add regarding the police report, if you do file a claim, a lot of adjusters, they get the police report through services, and it may take longer than 9 or 10 days. It may take 14 or sometimes 21 days. If you can get a copy of the police report sooner and provide it to your adjuster, you may want to consider doing it. You may want to keep the receipt for paying out of pocket. They may reimburse you for it. Not always. I'm not saying that they always will, but if you can get the police report and it confirms everything you're saying, you can get it 2 weeks faster than the adjuster would be able to. That's something to consider as well in regards to expediting your claim. So there are a lot of things regarding the claims world, the insurance world, that a lot of people don't know. There's simple fixes and simple things, but that's why it's good for us to have this show, just breaking that down, considering we both met in an insurance training class, and it was an amazing process then, just like it's an amazing process now. But the point being, any key information that can help you all in regards to making better choices, better decisions, is well worth it.
And as an extension of that, a lot of Texas cities and communities, the police reports are redacted if it's to anybody who's not involved in the loss. So going to get it yourself, even though it takes time out of your day, not only will it speed it up because they'll present it to you faster than they will your adjuster, if you're in certain counties or precincts, the ones they send the adjuster might be all blacked out and pretty much useless.
Right. Which most people don't know this. So that's why it's good to have that information to help out. And also, I understand as well, nobody wants to get into an accident. So when you do get into an accident, you're trying to get in and get out and speed up the process. And sometimes you take people at their word. You trust people because they present themselves in a certain way. But I'm telling you, from my experience as an adjuster, and I'm quite sure Chris will say this as well, people change their story. I don't know if people get into their ear what happens, but people change their story more times than not. And even on a dash cam, you can tell them there's dash cam footage of the accident. They still will deny it. They still will say they didn't do it. Not always, but more times than not, people will deny, deny, deny. So make sure you do everything you can to prove what happened and have your receipts. Not just literal receipts, but in the age we live in regards to receipts showing proof of what you need those receipts.
And Texas is a subrogation state, and what that means, insurance companies generally don't sue each other. They have an agreement that they'll bring it to arbitration and review a file, and if they're found responsible that the file indicates that the other insurance company is wrong, they will reimburse the other one for out-of-pocket expenses, including deductibles incurred by the not-at-fault party. So sometimes consider that as well, that at the scene, somebody could say, I always have my cell phone, call me, or I'm at fault, let me know. If the at-fault party insurance company is not able to get a hold of them, they will not make a decision on the loss, and you might have to go through your own insurance company. Your insurance company will try to process the loss, get your vehicle fixed, and then they will go through subrogation to get that money back from the other insurance company, especially if you have that police report works well in that instance, as well as any statement from witnesses that you have available. So collect all that when you're in there and realize it might not be immediate and you might have to pay something out of pocket. So if you can, price your deductible to what money you can afford to be without for at least an 8-month period, because subrogation is not a quick process, but they will get that money back to you if it's found that the other person's at fault, even if they respond to their insurance company like day 29 instead of day 1.
Right. And one thing I want to add regarding the deductible, I know we discussed it before, but a lot of people, they get higher deductibles because it saves them money overall on their policy. But if you have a $1,000 deductible or a $1,500 deductible, basically what that means is you're responsible for that amount. So if you have a $500 deductible, you're responsible for that $500 deductible. And anything that exceeds that is what your insurance covers. So if you have a $1,500 deductible, you need to think about if that's money that you, if you get into an accident, can you pay $1,500 up front regarding when your vehicle's repaired to pay your deductible? Because a lot of people do that to save money, but realistically $1,500 or deductible or $1,000 deductible, it's a bit high. So these are things you want to consider. Some people have deductibles as low as $100. I'm not saying you have to go that route, but like I said, you can adjust it. And you want to be in a situation where if you get into an accident or something happens to your vehicle, you have that money to be able to pay the body shop for your vehicle.
And I think that really covers a lot of the topics on this. We did go long because it's a subject that we know a lot about. But I just want everybody to be aware of what's available out there to protect yourself. And the parting word or the lasting word for this episode is to contact your insurance company to get clarification on what your coverages are and what coverages they recommend. Sure, your insurance broker or your insurance agency gets a commission out of it, but normally the more coverage – that commission difference, if you already have a policy and adding additional coverage, is often less than what they would get hourly for going to get a new customer. And they're already your customer. They want to keep you, so you'll add more policies as you continue acquire more assets. In later episodes, we'll go over renter policies, home policies, umbrella policies, recreational line policies. But just know, the goal of an insurance agency is not just to have one policy. They want more. So they're going to provide and service your policy so that you trust them, you refer other people, and you bring more business that of more products into your portfolio.
Well said, Chris. Well said.
And so, but before we go, as we always do, is the stock update. And so this week was a pretty good week for my stocks, even though I personally got out of a lot of them as I had my sell limit set for a couple of weeks now. Sprint Corporation got above $6. I know I talked a lot of trash last week because I was angry. I was annoyed. Really, the precipice for it was they're in talks again to get purchased by T-Mobile. One thing I learned is Sprint has almost $36 billion in debt. So if this merger doesn't go through T-Mobile, they're at risk of falling behind because they don't have the money to invest in their own product. So that's going to make a big difference. While they went above $6, they did end the week back at $5.78. They went above $6 on Wednesday or Thursday when those talks opened again. So this week, in total, they went up more than 9%. But from when we started this 4 or 5 weeks ago, the total gain on that stock was 9% or 9.1% when rounding up. My other one, Parsley Energy, I'm learning more about this one as well. One thing that concerned me on that is there are a lot of institutional investors that got out of it, a lot of mutual funds, hedge funds, and that's what crashed the stock last week. This time of year, at the end of every quarter, it generally takes at least 3 weeks for quarterly earnings to be reported, and that's usually reported the third or fourth week of the following month, which is this week coming up. So you're going to see a lot of movement of stocks, and this week will probably reflect better on the overall market as companies either beat their estimates or fail to meet their estimates that they've announced publicly. Parsley Energy, it looks like the market people think they're going to beat their estimates. They've only not hit their estimates or not exceeded their estimates one time in the past six quarters. They went up 9.365% for this total term of when we started this podcast to now. And based on last week results, they went up more than 11% in total. It's learning these nuances that are really giving me insight into how stocks work or timing and booking. So if you believe in a company and you believe in information that you've read, that's why you want to get as much knowledge about it so you know what the earnings are going to be before it happens without doing anything illegal to acquire that information.
Right. My stocks, I mean, Micron... As a whole, like I said before, I feel like Micron moving forward is going to be a stock to stick with. I see that being a stock that might be a long-term strategy based on where it is and the fact that even when the stocks were taking losses, it took a minor loss, but it's bouncing back as a whole. General Electric, I'm considering getting out of General Electric. It's starting to rise versus the overall downhaul it was taking, but I just don't see, based on the tremendous debt that it's in right now, I don't really see it coming out of that. I'm starting to look into other avenues and other things to get into versus GE versus when I first started, I felt like it was going to, you know, get down to a low price and then start to jump and see that transition take place. I'm not seeing that transition yet. So I may be looking to get out of GE. But Micron is standing pat, it's standing firm. I think it's going to keep going in the right direction. Although we talked about it last week regarding tariffs and the fact that trading and how that may affect it moving forward. So that's something to watch. But as of right now, I'm still going to stand pat on it.
And one thing about General Electric that I did find out is we underestimate the average performance of stocks similar to General Electric because they do give a dividend, and that means that they give a percentage of their earnings at the end of the year. So the value of your stock is actually different and likely higher. Though analysts estimate that this might be the first time in a long time that GE hasn't paid a dividend, that's the reason why you stay in stocks like that, because you make extra money. You see what Apple does over these previous years. They give a 1.4% dividend. So if you own one of their shares, which is above $160, you're getting $1.6 back. So if you have multiple shares, you're making extra money on the percentage of growth that exists there. And that's one way that institutions or companies encourage you not to trade shares through volatility and hold on to it for promise of, we promise we're going to reward you with an extra amount of money that you could reinvest into your stocks at the end of the year. One thing that might be affecting General Electric is that this number does reflect the end of the week where they explain that due to accounting rule changes that were necessary by the SEC, they have to go back and revise their reporting for 2 years, which indicate an additional likely loss of 13 cents on the overall stock versus what they were expecting of 9 cents. So for them to only be down 9% from where we were, that shows how well it performed last week until that news came out and that dropped on Friday. Well, with that being said, I'd like to thank everybody joining for Fees Always Win, and hopefully we were able to provide a service and understanding of your products and your insurance product. Please reach out to your insurance agent or your insurance company. Make sure you have enough coverage. Make sure you're protected so you and your family don't have to worry about the existing assets and the growth, whether those are stocks, whether those are bonds, treasury notes. Protect yourself. Make sure you have that coverage.